Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call the March 14, 2007 session of the House Committee on Workforce and Economic Development to order. And we're going to have several bills up this morning. I'm going to give the public some idea of what we're going to be doing, or perhaps more importantly, not doing here today. We're going to have a public hearing on the Workforce Innovation Council bill, House Bill 2767. Do not have an intention of working that bill today. House Joint Memorial Number 7, the Employee Free Choice Act. Our intention will be to refer that one to Business and Labor today, and the public hearing will hopefully be short. Testimony on whether or not we should move that bill. And then lastly, the Skill Up bill, we are waiting for additional amendments to that bill. And I would just like to gently urge everyone who has an interest in that bill that we have coddled that bill, we have loved that bill, we have nurtured that bill. We've had hearings, we've had testimony, we've had amendments, we've had other amendments, and now we're waiting for additional amendments. And if this bill is to ever join the great bills that our committee has heard and moved on, bills like the Ice Age and the Stone Age and Stonehenge and the caveman and even the meteors.
We on the left are feeling abused.
If this bill is to soar like the meteor bill, then we have to at some point admit that it's time to let it go. So I'm urging all of you, committee members and the public, that if there are any more amendments to this bill, they can be done on the other side. And the intent is in the near future, as soon as possible, to move that bill, and your cooperation in that matter would be greatly appreciated. And with that, I am going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2767. Barry, do we have a sign-up sheet on that one? Okay. All right. I'm going to open that public hearing, and like to... Representative Dahlin, would you like to present that bill to the committee?
You don't ask for written testimony yet.
No.
Marty, you don't have time to prepare a written testimony?
Oh, you girl.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Representative John Dahlin, House District 59. House Bill 2767 comes to you as a result of this committee's effort to advance workforce innovation. We heard from several other witnesses that innovation had moved Oregon's industry forward, had brought us several large industries. And as a result of discussion among committee members, we thought that we should take a look at innovation in workforce development and economic development. In talking with members of the committee, the appointees were decided upon. I believe Representative Hovey even has an amendment to add one more. But basically, that's what our attempt was to do, is to bring some innovation into the workforce development. And that simply is what the bill does. We put together a committee. The committee had various members on it that we thought would bring innovation and help us. I will use the term skill up Oregon's people with innovative ideas. Very simple.
Thank you very much, Representative Dahlin. Questions from the committee? Not seeing any. Thank you very much, and...
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I have one question. Maybe two.
Oh.
Thank you. Representative Dallamy, you know, I really like this concept. I just wanted to clarify where the funds that are appropriated in this bill come from.
We didn't give a reference to funds. We just drafted the committee on the ways and means it goes. Go ahead, Richard.
Follow up. Well, I mean, you know, the bill does create Oregon Workforce Innovation Fund, which is distinct from the general fund. I'm just trying to.
We do not identify a source of funds.
Okay.
And Representative Holby, there may be a couple of other issues that in this bill that we're gonna work out, and that very well is maybe one of them. It is actually on my list as well.
We have some other issues, Representative, in that this committee may exist. We'll have this bill prepped and ready to go, but I think we have a council that deals with innovation. And if they accomplish all of the things that we're looking for in this bill, this bill will go to the other side, but not the Senate.
Okay, I'm glad that we're communicating on the same level now.
Anyone else? Thank you very much, Representative Dahl.
Thank you.
I don't have anyone else signed up for this bill, but I'm sure there are others that might like to testify. Seeing nods in the affirmative, please come forward. Good morning. Lita and Peggy, if you'd both please identify yourselves for the record. Welcome to our committee.
My name is Peggy Miller, and I'm a member of the Oregon Workforce Investment Board and also a technology employer here in Oregon.
Lita Colligan, Governor's Office, Workforce Policy Advisor. Thank you for inviting us in to testify today.
Thank you very much. Please proceed.
Chair Witt, Vice Chair Riley, Vice Chair Lynn, and members of the committee. I just introduced myself. I'm Peggy Miller. I'm a member of the Oregon Workforce Investment Board, and I've been on that board for the past 2 years, and I want to know that my testimony here today is about that board and what we think that we bring to Oregon and perhaps the objectives of the bill that you're considering. As a business member of the State Workforce Investment Board, I believe we do face urgent situation in preparing skilled workers for high-wage jobs. We need to take decisive action to ensure that more students are completing high school with the skills to enter the workforce and that adults get the help that they need in improving their skills to advance in the workforce and obtain higher-wage jobs. I believe in that wholeheartedly. But I don't believe that at this point another council is the solution. I do believe that going forward with some of the proposals like the Skill Up Fund is the way to advance these objectives. The Oregon Workforce Investment Board is a 25-member business and labor-led board. And we have much of the representation that is proposed in this bill. We have representatives from the governor's office, from legislators, from community colleges, from labor unions, from educators, from the Oregon University system, from economic development, from businesses, from community organizations, and more. So you can see that we've tried to create a very broad scope representation and input, and it's working very effectively. In particular, as a business member and one in management, I think that the coming together of the labor and the business leaders has been most exciting because we're all on the same page in what we're trying to accomplish. The mission of our Oregon Workforce Investment Board is twofold. We serve over 200,000 people annually and help them find jobs and assess their skills and refer them to training. However, the second and I think more strategic part of what we do is that we also focus on policies and planning to improve and enhance workforce education and training system services. And I believe that we've been very, very forward-looking. We have a strategic plan, and we're actively working that plan, and we look to make this an even stronger effort in the future. I want to tell you about the accomplishments that we've achieved in the last several years and about where we're heading. And hopefully you'll see that this is a board that I believe meets the objectives of the bill that you're considering today. Some of our accomplishments in the last years is that we helped establish the Oregon Healthcare Workforce Institute. And this is a public-private partnership that focuses on coordinating the statewide efforts in the healthcare worker shortage. We've helped develop and spur the Oregon Manufacturing Strategy, which is a four-point plan to raise awareness about the importance of jobs in manufacturing and to build a skilled labor pool in that sector. And it's also operates in collaboration with regional manufacturing strategies. We've provided seed funds for the Northwest Agricultural Consortium of Oregon, and this is in partnership with the UFW to develop cross-training programs for agricultural workers in the wine, nursery, and dairy businesses. We funded the RV Consortium in Lane County, and this consortium has identified workforce training needs and gaps in their particular industry and is developing industry-specific solutions. We've provided the support for the Mid-Willamette Valley Food Processing and Metal Industrial Consortium in Marion, Polk, and Yamhill counties to help them craft targeted training for these industries. We've worked with the Oregon Biosciences Association to develop specific programs in association with their industry. We've provided curriculum development funds for the Pacific Northwest Wind Energy Consortium in the Columbia Gorge. And, you know, as you well know, renewable energy is a significant future opportunity. And this consortium has developed a technician training program with the Columbia Gorge Community College. And I guess I want to emphasize that a lot of our work is done, as you, I think you can hear, in conjunction with existing agencies, existing resources. So we don't look to duplicate or run separate systems. We look to leverage the investments that you, the legislature, and our government have made in our various agencies. Some more things that we've done, we supported the Wood Products Consortium in testing their current workforce and developing skill paths for their workers. We funded the Truck Driver Shortage Consortium. It seems very simplistic, but it's a program that helps move warehouse workers into truck drivers and gives them the proper training to fill a very necessary part of the transportation infrastructure. We've also established the Governor's Employer Workforce Training Fund, and under this program, we've made $11 million in grants to companies, groups of companies, and workers or industry associations to respond to immediate training needs of current and emerging workers. Now, that's a nice investment, but it's also leveraged more than $24 million in employer training funds to invest in the workers. And what you get out of these programs is workers whose skills advance, and therefore they move into higher wage jobs, precisely the economic development that I think that this committee is very interested in seeing happen. We've also worked with the community colleges to create career pathways. And this is a program that identifies technical needs and career needs and shortens and defines the road to getting the kind of credentials that will move someone up into technically qualified positions. And we funded the AFL-CIO to conduct research on companies at risk due to globalization and to build early warning systems to aggregate demand for joint industrial apprenticeship programs. I think you see we've been very active in a broad scope to try to be that innovative workforce development advocate. So these are the highlights of accomplishments. Let me tell you about the strategic plan that we developed. We built, the governor asked our Oregon Workforce Investment Board to create a plan to build a globally competitive workforce, and we did. We did this by convening hundreds of people around the state over the past year and a half, and we worked collaboratively with our network of local and regional workforce boards, state agencies, and many businesses, labor, education, and workforce partners to create the plan. So it clearly is a vision that's had broad input, and I believe is a plan for the future, and it challenges us to do better. Some of the work under that plan that you'll be seeing, and I hope we can bring before your committee on the results, is that we have an apprenticeship integration project, and this is a partnership with the Bureau of Labor and Industries, the State Apprenticeship Council, Department of Education, and the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development to expand the use of the apprenticeship model. That's to integrate apprenticeships into Oregon workforce and education systems, to increase the number of students entering and completing apprenticeship programs, and to leverage the Joint Apprenticeship Training Council training centers and professional expertise. If this is successful, we will move to expand it into more communities. We have a pilot program going to connect TANF, that's the those that receive temporary assistance to needy families, to career pathways in healthcare as part of a policy academy with the National Governors Association. We're working on implementing the next phase of the healthcare workforce development priorities, and we're making investments in communications and career information campaign to raise awareness among young people and their parents about the opportunities in high-wage, high-demand jobs and the education and skills and training programs that are available to prepare them for these careers. We also are continuing our regional investments in workforce training, and these are administered by the local workforce response teams in conjunction with the local workforce boards to really target the training needs of local communities across the state of Oregon. Our board is targeting resources to critical problems and issues to reach the goals in our plan. We see our roles as leaders. We will not do all the work, but we work with our local boards to help mobilize the businesses, workers, students, teachers, parents, and elected leaders, because together we all can help and address this problem. We appreciate the opportunity to testify today and to let you know about these programs. We understand that you have ideas about how to improve the system or to address specific issues or programs. We believe that the work that we have already accomplished, the leadership we have already provided through the strategic plan and our action plan for the future, are precisely the types of efforts you envisioned in proposing the Oregon Workforce Innovation Council. Whatever we are not currently doing, we urge you to direct your ideas to the Oregon Workforce Investment Board. We want to work with you to enhance and expand these workforce innovation efforts. Rather than setting up another council, we hope that we can count on your work, count on you to work with us, the already established Oregon Workforce Investment Board, to accomplish these shared goals. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify today.
Peggy, thank you very, very much for your excellent testimony and for your leadership on one of the boards that is critically important to the future economic success of our state. We have a number of people, I think, that are watching this by television, and I was wondering if you would share with our larger audience what your day job is when you're not chairing the Oregon Workforce Investment Board, and perhaps why you see the work that the board does is important.
Well, my day job is a technology employer. Right now I'm investing in technology companies that create the new jobs of the future. In the past, I've headed various technology companies, and I can tell you that how I became interested in the Oregon Workforce Investment Board is precisely the challenges that we faced in recruiting technically skilled, qualified workers. And it's not getting any easier, folks. It's a real problem for the future, and it's a countrywide problem. But if we don't address our own Oregon regional issues, we're going to lose competitive not only nationally but globally. So the urgency of the issue is right before us each and every day that we're out there working in the business community.
Well, we certainly appreciate your leadership on these critically important issues. And before we take questions and comments, I'd like to recognize Lita, and we'll question you both at the same time.
Chair Witt, members of the committee, thank you very much for inviting me here today, too. I'm going to be very brief. I think Peggy has said it all, and I don't need to say much more except that I want to reiterate her request to you. I believe innovation is extremely important. We have a relationship, the Workforce Board does, with both the Oregon Innovation Council and the Oregon Business Council. What we've been asked to do is to be the leaders on this board, and I sit on the board for the governor. We have been asked to be the leaders in the workforce arena. The Innovation Council is looking at how do they do the R&D piece of the innovation agenda. How do they expand research and development so that we drive development of new industries? And the Workforce Board is the other side of the equation. How do we prepare the people for those new innovations? So I think we've made an effort to connect to those other councils and to take a very proactive and innovative approach, and we ask you to direct, again, as Peggy said, to work with us and let us know if you think that what we're doing isn't innovative enough or if you have better ideas. We would certainly want to bring those to the board and consider implementing them if possible. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Questions from the committee?
A comment.
Representative Bowman.
I might say that House Bill 2767 came into existence because we on the committee, and we all signed the bill, saw the need for innovation and coordination. When the bill came out, I had opportunity to meet with Lita in Chair Witt's office. I don't think there's a thing that I envision this bill doing that council is not doing. I'm pleased that we were able to give them a form, that they were able to let us know that even though we were all concerned about this idea, these people are actively engaged and carrying the coal. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Holby.
Thank you, Chair Witt. And I share Representative Dallum's sentiments, and I commend the work that everybody's doing around the workforce arena, and just always had a concern about the coordination of around the state, because we have so many different agencies who seem to all be doing workforce issues, whether it's the Economic Development Department, the Bureau of Labor and Industries with apprenticeship and training, and the community college structure, workforce development, and the WIB board. And I think the genesis of the idea of this bill was really, and the governor's office, of course, was trying to, get a handle on coordinating that amongst all the different players in the employment department, too. I mentioned another one. So we have all these different agencies that all seem to have their hands in workforce issues and really felt like, there needed to be more cooperation and coordination between all those different players. And I think that was really the idea behind this bill was to create that sort of scenario, because it seemed like everybody had their own little piece and was, really not working together as much as in my mind. And I, admit to being a little bit wrong in that notion, because I see the governor's office has really stepped up and is trying to coordinate a lot of these different pieces together, so I commend all the people that are involved in workforce and just continue to encourage them to work together on a lot of these issues. And I have one other question, if I may.
Please, Mr. Chair. Please.
And my question is, you know, maybe just a little, like I have a lot of time to look at consortiums, but I'm really curious about some of these consortiums and where do we go to get information about the consortium themselves, who makes it up, and who are the participants in these consortiums, I guess, to some degree, a little more specifics about what they're doing and, you know, what these projects are about. Some of them look very, very exciting to me. I'm familiar with the RV Consortium down in Lane County. Of course, it's my area, but I've got some interest in some of the other ones, too, and I'm just kind of curious who all is involved in those consortiums. So where would I get that information?
Chair, Representative Holby, we put information about the proposals and projects that are funded on the WorkSource Oregon website, and so I hope that you would find most of it there, but I would be happy to provide any information that you would like about any consortium if you'd like me to get that for you directly or any other member of the committee as well.
Thank you.
And I would like to make one other comment about your previous remark. I really appreciate the comment. And I just wanted to say that as I want to acknowledge Cam Price Brawley and others who are in the room, because while I think the governor's office has taken a strong role in trying to coordinate this work, and to the governor has helped drive that with his direction to the board, these agencies are all working together. That's the purpose of the Workforce Investment Board, is that we have representatives of all those various agencies and our other partners so that we are working on a coordinated plan. And while there are a lot of agencies, and we acknowledge that, they all do have very distinct roles in the services that they provide, and it's a complementary package rather than, you know, duplicative package of services.
And if I may also,
please,
Chair Webb and representative of the committee, you know, as an outside business person, you join boards and sometimes you wonder what you're going to be involved in. And I have been absolutely pleased and just so grateful for the coordination that we've seen. We, the agencies that we work with, they all share the joint mission and have been so cooperative and very forthcoming in how they can make their contribution to the total effort, recognizing the other efforts that are being brought to the table. So I guess I want to underscore from a private business perspective how pleased I am that the agencies are working together so well.
Well, and that's certainly very comforting for all of us to know as well, that that level of cooperation is going on. I share Representative Holby's thoughts about the genesis of this bill. And as I look through sections 4 and 5, the key points that come to mind here are expand industry and workforce strengths, to promote agreements on workforce education through all of our partners and all of our sectors, to invest in community colleges and our school districts, where this committee has felt that it's critically important for the education and development of our future workforce will take place, and to identify issues and trends in workforce education and training, both the types of training and education that take place, as well as employer and worker needs. And lastly, the discussion about the application of the Workforce Innovation Fund. And what I'm hearing, Peggy, is that many of these are issues that the Workforce Investment Board is already intimately involved in. And I think that, as Representative Holby suggested, that this bill is, if nothing else, an emphasis by this committee of the importance on these issues. We certainly want to back your work to the greatest extent possible. And I am going to ask a favor. If you would consider sitting down with Representative Dahlem and seeing how we could dovetail the issues that are brought forward in this bill with the work that is already being carried out with the Oregon Workforce Investment Board.
We would be pleased to do that.
And I have one additional question. It's my understanding that you have a vacancy on the Oregon Workforce Investment Board for a member from this this legislative body.
Yes, we do.
This might be a great opportunity for you to work with with an apprentice who's about ready to become a journeyman here. And always good to know who it is that you're going to hire for, you know, for that permanent for that permanent work position. So.
Was that a recommendation that I might use, or
vote on that?
And with that, once again, thank you so much, both of you, for appearing today, and Peggy for your willingness to share your time and talent in terms of your leadership of the Oregon Workforce Investment Board. Your efforts are greatly appreciated for all the work that you do for the people of Oregon. Thank you, and thank you for appearing here today.
Thank you all.
Is there anyone else from the public that would like to testify today on House Bill 2767? Seeing the affirmative in the back of the room. Good morning, Bill.
Morning, Chair Litt. Committee, for the record, Bill Clinton, Carpenters Industrial Council. I've made testimony before on this issue. We're all for workforce development. But I would like to have the committee take a look at the broader picture. We need to look back at our last 3 years of K-12 schools. There's where we need to look at the students that are in their last 2 or 3 years of high school. And we all know that college is the ideal goal for high school students, but we all know that not very many people are going to go on to college, let alone make it through the first year. We need to develop some work ethics, some work knowledge, like we did 30, 40 years ago in our high schools. People could come out of high school and go right to work. They had the basic training. An employer was glad to hire them. They already knew how to do the basic and the more experienced work. What we have now, we have a 2, 3, 4 year dead period. When these students come out of high school, they try and find a job. Jobs competition is steep these days for good jobs. They lose that job, they mill around, they find another job, they work a few more months, and they lose that job. Finally, the workforce, the career centers, and Representative Holvey is right. There is a lot of competition in the workforce development, career centers. You've got all these people pulling on these unemployed people, but by the time they strike out the third or fourth time, their morale is down. It takes a long time for these people to lock into a good job. And we all know we've lost thousands and thousands and thousands of jobs in this state, nationwide. I urge the committee to take a broad look again at if we could get back and start some work ethics in our high schools. And these people that are not going to go to college, there's no reason for them to take college oriented classes in high school. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Questions from the committee? Seeing any? Thank you very much, Bill. Appreciate your comments. Anyone else wish to testify on House Bill 2767? Seeing anyone, I'm going, before I close the public hearing, Representative Holby, we've received some new amendments, and if you'd work with Representative Dahlem on those.
Be happy to.
Appreciate that. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2767. Next up, we're going to have public testimony on House Joint Memorial 7. And just as a lead into this this public hearing, our intention, as I mentioned earlier, is to refer this bill to Business and Labor Committee. And the testimony that I would like to hear, if there is any, would be on whether we should move that bill or not. I recognize that the bill was posted as a full committee hearing. If there is anyone that can't come back or to be heard at a later time, please feel free to offer that testimony as well. I suspect this may be a very short public hearing. With that, I'm opening a public hearing on House Joint Memorial 7. And I'm not seeing anyone signed up for that bill. Any public testimony on that? No public testimony. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Joint Memorial 7 and open a work session on the same memorial. Representative Riley.
Mr. Chair, I move House Joint Memorial 7 to the floor without recommendation as to passage, and the bill be referred to the Committee on Business and Labor.
Representative Riley moves House Joint Memorial 7 to the House floor without recommendation with a joint, a referral to House Business and Labor. Is there any objection?
I guess I'm looking to you, Mr. Chair, or is that the appropriate procedure? Do we go to the floor and then back down to the committee?
Yes, it is, because it's already been assigned to this committee.
Okay.
And the reason for this, Representative Dahlem, is that that committee is hearing a number of similar-minded bills, and it's probably questionable whether it should be here or heard with other bills in a package.
So, Mr. Chair?
Yes. Vice Chair Lynn.
And where is the rule that the instead of going to the Business and Labor from here directly to that committee, it goes to the floor? Can you give us a rule about that?
Yeah, our parliamentarian.
let me deal with that. You know, we typically move to transfer a bill to another committee. That's sort of the shorthand.
Yeah.
The correct motion, and the one that we should be using, is exactly the one that was made. The committee doesn't. The form of the motion that we are allowed to make on a bill basically is to refer to the floor with a due pass recommendation, or refer to the floor with no recommendation, and then we can add with a subsequent referral too. And that's exactly what the motion was. We typically in committees use a shorthand in which we don't mention the floor, but the correct motion is the one that was made.
But where is the rule or the regulations that the moving stuff floor? That's what I.
Well, that's in the House rules.
That's in the House rules.
Yes, I can't recall exactly.
Can
the
you
section.
Give us the House rule? Can you cite the House rule?
Chair, members of the committee, I can't actually cite the House rule, but I did. It is in the House rules.
Yeah.
I think. Page-wise, it's about three pages in.
Yeah, and it defines what actions the committees can take, and one of them is the one that the motion contains.
And the reason for that, if I may, is that we can't assign anything to anyone except back to the floor, and the speaker then reassigns it.
Right.
We can't assign anything to any committee.
In effect, what we're doing is sending the matter back to the speaker's desk with our recommendation.
Correct.
Yes, and Mr. Chair?
Yes, please.
In the past, what we did, we sent to the different committee with the approval of the speaker. And so that's what we did in the past, but to me, it is not a big issue anyway.
You know, if I may,
please,
Mr. Chair, the way that parliamentarians are going to interpret any motion is that it was within the rules, and therefore we'll figure out which motion we intended to make, whether we actually made that motion or not. And the motion we intended to make in all of those situations is the one that Vice Chair Riley actually made this time.
Okay. And Vice Chair Lim, if it would make you more comfortable, I'd be happy to recess here for a moment and have our parliamentarian come in and describe that motion for us.
I think that's a good idea, Mr. Chair.
Just for knowledge, I'd like to hear that. But it makes sense to me that our job is not to assign bills. Our job is to read and yay or nay. But when we go to the floor, then I would have a question for the parliamentarian. We're going to the floor, and all that we're going to ask them to do on the floor then is reassign them.
We're not going to go to the floor, Representative Donald. What we're going to do is the speaker is going to this goes to the speaker's desk, and he then would say, if we didn't put this subsequent referral on, he would send it to the floor himself. Instead, we're asking him to refer it to another committee, and he will be the one who does that, not us.
This won't go on the calendar.
No, it won't be on the floor at all.
But for the educational purpose, if
yes.
we get the parliamentarian clarify this issue
yes.
for now and in the future, this is a good
Certainly.
Idea.
We'd be happy to do that. Our committee is in recess for a moment while we call in the House parliamentarian.
Thank you.
Recognize Chief Clerk Ramona Kennedy as our parliamentarian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ramona Kennedy, Chief Clerk for the House. As I understand the question, there was a motion made to send a particular bill, and the desire of the committee is to have it go from here to another committee. I believe that a motion was made, as I understand it, that bill would be sent from this committee without recommendation. To the floor, and then it be referred to another committee, the Committee on Business and Labor. The motion that was made is appropriate. Although it has the words to the floor, basically what that means in this case is that it doesn't really go for a vote by the members of the House of Representatives, but it just comes through the desk, meaning my office. With that recommendation, should it be adopted, the measure would go from this committee to my desk, of which we would then list it on our committee report summary, more commonly known as the blue sheet, with all the support data from your committee. It would be noted it's without recommendation. I understand you have not worked it or considered it. And then with the approval of the speaker, because it did not have a subsequent referral, we will be taking that recommendation to the speaker. The speaker will sign off on that, and then it immediately will be referred into the new committee, the Committee on Business and Labor, and they can take that measure then up in that committee. If there's any other questions that the committee membership might have, I'd be more than happy to answer those.
When the motion was made, and this is a point of clarification, I guess, over here, was the word do pass?
No.
Without recommendation.
Without recommendation as to passage.
There was no... I thought I heard do pass, but there wasn't. Okay. Clear that.
Yes, Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ramona, I'm curious now that this is brought up. I wasn't curious, but now I am. I'm curious in your comments if we hadn't worked the bill or considered it. If in fact we had a public hearing on the bill first, is that considering the bill, and would that affect us being able to go through this motion?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hovley, no. Basically, the committee could actually work a bill, and we've had this process in place, obviously, for many years, and I used it sort of as an example that there is sometimes measures that a committee may work very thoroughly and still not want to make a recommendation. So obviously the option of without recommendation either to the floor for a vote or to another committee is always available to the committee. And it really doesn't matter if the committee has had a public hearing or even several work sessions. They still could decide that they are sort of torn as to whether they believe this is good public policy or not, and they are sending it on without any recommendation.
Vice Chair Lim.
Yes, and my question is, Ramona, that in my past six of session, we never sent that the any bill or a measure to the other committee without recommendation directly to the committee, without saying to the floor. Technically, when we are saying that to the floor, then it's got to go to the floor. But to me, it is odd that we send this bill to the other committee, and then to the floor first, and then to the other committee. If this goes to the floor, where is the rules and the regulation citing that this has to go to the committee, to that the floor?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, the process in the House is somewhat different than in the Senate. I'd like to clarify that first, in that basically our rules allow a committee to add additional referral. And upon that recommendation from that committee to add that additional referral, it has to come, it cannot just flow directly to that committee. There has to be a paper trail, as one might look at this. When we say to the floor, it is not actually going to the floor for consideration by the full membership, but it is coming to the chief clerk's office, which is viewed as to the floor. When you say do pass on a measure or do pass with amendments to the floor, basically the paperwork is being delivered to the desk. And then the desk processes those recommendations. In this case, that recommendation is that it be referred then to another committee, bypassing actually all the way to what we would consider the floor. This is a process that has been incorporated probably in the last 15 years. Prior to that, you had to take the speaker did not have the latitude to unilaterally decide that that was a good recommendation and send it off to a second committee. It actually had to go to the floor. And the membership decided whether or not it went to that second committee or not. So maybe the language is not completely clear, but certainly the intent and the custom and precedence of the House over the last 15 to 20 years has been now, through House rules, we have the authorization that the Speaker, at the recommendation of a committee, then can forward that bill on to the second committee without it actually coming to the full membership of the House for any action. That is clarified in your House rules.
Further questions or comments? Yes, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to note how wonderful it is that we have a parliamentarian who is able to describe the history of what would otherwise be a very odd form and explain how it got here. I didn't know that last bit about the old rule of requiring the members to actually vote on the floor to make a new referral to another committee. And that helps to explain why we use the form of the motion that Vice Chair Riley made. And that's a useful piece of information about our procedures. Reminds me a bit of institutions that are much older than ours and the odd ways in which they do things based on things that happened 500 years ago. It's just interesting, that's all.
Just one last comment. Please. It could be a question. So it is just the customary, or can you cite specific rules on this one?
Yeah, you can.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, unfortunately, I came in a hurry to help a different committee, and I didn't come with my glasses. And so, giving that disclaimer, basically, let me see if I can find in the House rules where it states that a...
Ellen? Do you need my glass?
It states at the request of a committee reporting on a measure, the speaker may rescind or add a subsequent referral to another committee. That rule allows the speaker now unilaterally to be able to accept your recommendation, and that is under House Rule 901, subsection 3.
Mm-hmm.
That allows the speaker now unilaterally to take your recommendation under consideration and agree with your recommendation and send it to the second committee. There has been, however, if the committee has not checked with the speakers in the past, and they, in their wisdom, try to make a recommendation that a bill go to a second committee, there has been times when that speaker has denied that request, and it will come back to the original committee, and the committee would have to reconsider their motion and try to work out another way of dealing with it. Mr. Chair, members, I think that the nuance here also is that the reason the language has not been changed, probably in addition to just the history of the language, is that it's pretty clear that this House of Representatives looks to granting power to individuals very carefully. And in the past, when that was really a decision made by the full membership of the House, and they would have to adopt your committee report, that would be without recommendation, be it sent, that would be up under propositions and motions, and you would spend time deciding whether it should go to that second committee or not, in order to expedite these processes, and also for the balance of workload. And in some cases, in the balance of trying to get subject matter, like subject matters, to a second committee, this rule was put into place. Probably the most accurate language would be that you would send it without recommendation to the desk for processing, and with approval of the speaker, be referred to the next committee. But again, in the situation that the language that Representative Riley used in making this motion, it is clear that that is the process that will be followed, and that is what has been set out in not only rule, but in custom and practice.
Okay. Just my opinion, Mr. Chair. To me, there is no clear language if it goes to the floor or not, as I see it. So, but I have no objection that you're sending it to floor and then to the other committee. But technically, we just can send it to the other committee as long as the speaker approves of it. And so to me, either way, it doesn't make any big difference anyway.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair Lim. Ramona, thank you very much for appearing before our committee. I want to let you know that the chair definitely appreciates the lifeline that was extended here. And it was great hearing from you. And as Representative Barnhart said, your history has just been more than helpful. Thank you so much. Yeah. Representative Barnhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would simply note that in the rule 8.20, sub 3, it says a committee may act on each measure in its possession, A, by tabling the measure in committee, that's one option, or B, by reporting the measure out of the committee. And then there are three subsections of that, with the recommendation that it be referred to another committee, which is what this motion does, or B, favorably as to passage, or C, without recommendation. So any motion is to report it out with these recommendations, and that's the reason why we use the form that we use for the motion itself. And then, of course, the part that the parliamentarian referred to is in Rule 9.01, and you can see from reading that was obviously add-on. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ramona. Further questions or discussion on the motion?
We do have to. If we want to hold possession, though, we table. And then we can own that as long as we want to until Sine die.
That's right.
So there is one thing we can do that would keep the speaker from getting at something we wanted to possess.
Uh-huh. That's true.
And that's to table it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we'll be tabling a lot of things here.
I don't think so.
But this memorial's on to bigger and better things.
Yes.
Not hearing any further discussion on this motion, Barry, would you please call the roll?
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Dowell?
Aye.
Representative Grott?
Aye.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lim?
Excused.
Vice Chair Riley?
Aye.
Chair Witt?
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, House Joint Memorial 7 is sent to the floor without recommendation and on a referral to Business and Labor. And I will close the public hearing and work session on House Joint Memorial 7. Next up, folks, we're going to have the Skill Up Bill. And reiterating what I said earlier, we've had a series of amendments on this bill. We have found out late-breaking news that we have additional amendments. The committee has been, I think, very inclusive. We've been very patient. We have accepted everyone's input, and I think that input has come to an end. And it's time for us now to finalize this bill and get it up and moving. The public hearing that I'm going to open right now on House Bill 2206, in essence, is for anyone who's come perhaps a considerable distance and would be unable to testify at a later point. We're not going to work this bill today. I'm going to wait for the amendments to show up, and I suspect this, too, may be a very short public hearing. Anyone wish to testify on House Bill 2206? Yes, sir. Please come forward.
Good morning. Good morning, sir. Thank you for indulging me. I do have a problem getting back next occasion. My name is Wayne Estes, and on your sign-in form, I listed myself as related to something called UUPD. This is a ploy on my part. This is a labor cluster. I've heard you gentlemen discuss clusters for the past couple of months over the Internet.
Yes.
And you have various and sundry. Here's a labor cluster. UUPD, what in the world is that? Unemployed. Unemployed receiving benefits, unemployed not receiving benefits, underemployed, either working out of their skill set or working beneath their skill level, part-time and desiring full-time work, discouraged workers, your resumes never get a response, and so you quit sending them out. UUPD. Makes up 10% of the workforce, according to statistics that I've sent each of you in the past. That's quite a few people. I'm very anxious for 2206 to pass with amendments. I want to question the fairness of targeting, as I understood it from verbal testimony, that it would only address 3,000 employees. And I know that you've sliced and diced the workforce from time to time. There's 40% of high school diploma only, and they need skills. That comes to several hundred thousand people. There's another group that doesn't have a GED, and that's some more thousands. And then there's the UUPDs mixed in with all of that. And so $10 million is not going to get us very far in the overall task. And you say immediately, Mr. Chair, well, where are we going to get the money? Tell us what to do. Well, who's going to profit from this? From this committee or other, or the House floor, I've heard that business is in business for profit. The businesses will profit. Would they agree to more than $10 million? Would they accept an excise tax to fully fund Skill Up Oregon to the tune of $100 million, $1 billion? Add up the numbers. It gets very large very fast. And so I'm urging you to amend the bill to scale it up. And one other point, and I'll leave you. And I heard Mr. Dowell testify regarding Boeing engineers, that they had subdivided the jobs so badly that those engineers could only work at Boeing. And yet I think Honorable Adam Smith was a real champion of division of labor, and that's how we got to where we are. Is there a way for these employers to divide the labor and get the people into the workforce more quickly, a la an apprenticeship, or in lieu of an apprenticeship? That's just a suggestion. That's something that you could do. With that, Mr. Chair, thank you for your kindness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Estes. Questions or comments? Certainly. Yes, Representative Bowlby.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to thank you for your comments and coming up here and testifying. I share many of your sentiments that we fall way short of the investments we need in the workforce. No doubt about that. I don't think you'd get any arguments in this room about that. But we do struggle with having enough revenue to spread around. But I really do appreciate your comments because I believe there does need to be more investment into this field. I tend to agree with you that private enterprise needs to put up some more. But you know, the workers also benefit from this training and the jobs they get. So. But anyway, I just really appreciate you coming up and giving us your point of view.
Mr. Chair, I'd give you the first $1 to get this program going.
Well, we can't really take
it. I'll tell you what, Mr. Estes, refer you to the treasurer's office here.
Sir, this is what you get for $5,000. This is a Microsoft certificate. I went through their training back. I'm an old computer tech from 20 years ago, and I'm still having to try to catch up with this technology. I was funded through the government to get this certificate. It cost $5,000 for 5 months of training, and it still is only an entry-level certification. I'm concerned about the kind of certificates that you'll be actually purchasing with this plan also.
Mr. Estes, before you leave, I just a couple of comments. I too want to express our appreciation for your coming here and underscoring the vast need that our state has, and we're not unique.
Yes.
In terms of our workforce's needs for skill upgrades, education, training. It's the needs of our workforce, it's the needs of our employers, and you've indicated that you've watched our committee and we've heard a testimony from all sectors to that regard, and I appreciate very much your very personalized underscoring of that point. The other thing that I'd like to know is you have a certificate.
Yes, sir.
Which is, I think that's very important, because that certificate presumably is recognized everywhere. It says that you, Wayne Estes, have completed at least the elementary level of high-tech training. And that, I think, sir, is what is important and one of the lessons that our committee has learned from apprenticeship, that when that certification takes place, then the individual who has been certified can carry those credentials virtually anywhere. And the employer who is presented with that credential knows that he or she has a fully trained and skilled worker to the extent that certificate represents. And I think that's very important in terms of the mobility of our workforce and being able for someone here like yourself or others who don't have a job here could present that certificate clear across the United States and be recognized on the East Coast. And by the same token, the employer on the East Coast would say, you know what, this is a valid certificate, and I know what I'm getting from Mr. Estes. So I think you have made a couple of very good points here today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testifying before our committee. Anyone else on this bill today? Not seeing anyone, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2206. Anything else to come before our committee today?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Would you exercise your prerogative and hold this bill, or should this committee ask that this bill be tabled?
This bill is going to soar. The meteor bill, Representative Dahlem. So very shortly, as soon as we get this next set of amendments. Ellen, would you please give us a summary of our, let's see, it'd be Friday's agenda.
Thank you, Chair Witt, members of the committee. Our on March 16th at 8 a.m., our first bill that you will be hearing is House Joint Resolution 30, which demands that the American Museum of Natural History return the Willamette meteorite to Oregon. Your second bill will be 2903, which requires contractors submitting bids or proposals on state public contracts to certify where those services would be performed. House Bill 2981 authorizes the Economic and Community Development Department to create a reserve fund for nonprofit organizations that are engaged in alternative lending. And Senate Bill 139A requires a person operating a public use airport to provide notice of permanent closure.
And with that, before we adjourn, let it be noted that you heard it here first in the Workforce and Economic Development Committee. We've heard about Skill Up. We've heard about meteors. We've heard about the Ice Age. Who knows what you're going to hear about here. With that, stay tuned, and we will be adjourned.